Good. All right, Parsha Bahar, everybody. We're doing psukim that appear toward the end of the Parsha. The truth is, it's a very small Parsha, 57 psukim. But in Parak Chafei, Pasuk Chafei, it says, Ki yomo chachicho machar me'akuzaso. If your friend becomes poor, your brother becomes poor, and he sells his ancestral land. This is the land that he got from his father, from his father's father, grandfather, great-grandfather, all the way back to what happened when they left Mitzrayim. Uba go'alo akaruvelov, and his relative, who's close to him, comes. The Gauls memkarachi. And he redeems. He redeems the sale that his brother made. He goes ahead and he redeems it back. He takes it for himself. V'ish ki lo yelagoel, if a man doesn't have any relative, v'sigiyada, then he'll become wealthy enough, umatza kedei gulaso, and he'll have enough to be able to redeem everything and he won't have any issue whatsoever. So that's the kingdom, starts off this entire parsha, and he says, how can a Jew become so poor that he's going to sell the land that he inherited all the way back when? What did he do to deserve this punishment? This is ancestral land. This is the land that he got from his great-great-grandfather. How did HaKadosh Baruch Hu allow this to happen? What did the guy do? And he says, because of the beginning of the Parsha, it's that he didn't treat Shemitah with the proper respect. He didn't keep Shemitah properly. He didn't do Shvi's in the best possible way. And in the days of Yirmiyahu, we see that the Jews were sold into slavery to Avodah Zarah because they didn't keep Shemitah properly. And all the psukim follow that idea, that if you don't keep Shemitah, this is going to be the result. The hope is that our relative, the relative refers to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, will come and he'll redeem us. He'll take us out of the horrible state that we're in. So although it says straight out that you'll have a relative that goes and does it, perhaps this will be HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. Maybe it'll be HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. That was Yirmiyahu's tefillah. He was begging HaKadosh Baruch Hu to come and take care of his children because we can't take care of ourselves. Rabbi Bachai says the exact same thing. When we're so filled with sins that we no longer deserve to be on the land, we rely on HaKadosh Baruch Hu to bail us out. He's the one that's going to take care of us, and we have to do tshuva in order to bring back that Shekhinah itself. The Moshe of Zakenim and the Rabbeinu Ephraim, both Rishonim, say there are seven names to use to describe poor people in the Torah itself. Some of them you've heard, some that you might not have realized. For example, the word ani, obviously, means a poor person. The word ani comes from the word la'anos meponai. Right, la'anos meponai refers to what Paro is going to do to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He's going to be afflicted, but sort of like bent in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's as if he's saying, oy vey, I have nothing left. And an ani is somebody who is knocked down. Somebody who no longer has the status that he once had. A dal describes someone who's lacking in his own self-confidence. He feels poor. He feels like he has absolutely nothing. And it says, Madua ata dal in Shmuel Beis. Why do you feel so poor? Why do you feel so lowly? That's what a dal is, a guy who doesn't have the self-confidence that he needs to get better. A dach is someone who's crushed by his state of poverty. He doesn't feel like he can get out of it. Maducha is a grinder. That's what he feels like. How in the world am I going to get out of this? An Evyon is someone who desires everything, but he has no way to achieve it. He's got a taiva for everything in the world, and taiva is the word of Evyon itself. He's a dreamer, but he doesn't know how to get where he needs to go. A rush, someone who's driven out from his property or his possessions. The word nigrash me'achuzaso, he's kicked out from his actual areas. And finally, a miskein. Miskein is someone who needs to be taken care of. He can't take care of himself. The word haskein hiskanti was what the donkey said to Bilam. He needs someone else to take care of him. And finally, our word over here, mach. Mach, the way that we're referring to, ki yamuch achicha, the word mach means he's lowered from his previous status. He had something, and he's now no longer that person that he was. That's why it's perfect for our statement. And ani doesn't really go through there. That would be somebody who's afflicted, somebody who feels like something happened. This is a guy who just went down from his position of prestige. He had unbelievable things happening to him, and he no longer gets it. That's the level of someone who's a mach. Says reverse. The word mach is compared to the words mog or magag. Mog and magag means something that became dissolved very quickly. It melts down. And that refers to a person's dwindling fortune. Because again, the word mach is referring to a poor person who was wealthy, who was really, really rich, and then went down from that thing. He lost his social power. He lost his influence. The Malbim says it's not from the word magag. It's from the word moch, like the word namuch. He lowered himself from what he was, similar to what the ani was that we said up there. So lowering himself from that position. Either way, it means the same thing. A mach is a person who had and now no longer has. He was wealthy and he lost it. And why? Said before, the Rishonim say, the Das HaKadosh says, because of Shemitah. He didn't keep Shemitah properly. This is the result. He's going to lose everything he has. Rashi says, from the words ki yamuch, that a person can only sell his ancestral land when he has no choice. There's no way that you can do this in any other... Let's say a guy says, you know what? I could use a little bit of extra money. I want to spend extra money on something else. I'm not into farming. I'm not into doing that. So I'm going to sell the land. I'm not going to use a sharecropper. I'm going to sell my land and give it over to somebody else. Isn't that a good idea? To that, the pasuk says, you can't. Only kiyamuch. Only if you become poor. Only if you no longer can afford anything. That's when you're allowed to do it. And even then, you shouldn't sell the whole field. It should be me'ach huzaso. Sell some of the property, but not all kolach huzaso. Only sell a little bit. Only part of it should be. And that's really derech eretz. It's for us. When we get into business, sometimes we can sell off a lot of things in order to get what we need. Usually, it ends up being you only sell what you absolutely need to. Keep your assets. Keep as many assets as you can so that you don't lose everything out there. Because when you do that, unfortunately, the results are usually really, really terrible. That's what Rashi tells us to do. To lower ourselves and just do that. Rashi tells us that the relatives have permission to come along and redeem the field even against the buyer's will. The buyer comes along and he says, the buyer looks at him and says, I don't want to lose my field. I don't want this. I don't know what I'm doing over here. I bought this in order to keep it. The seller can come along and say, no, I'm allowed to redeem it. Or the redeemer can come along and say, it's an ancestral land. Anyone can get it. We can pull it up. We can take it away from you. We can redeem it for you. And it's a relative. That's what you're allowed to do. There's a shaila in Kiddushin, Memalef, if anyone is allowed to do it or if it's a mitzvah to do. Is the relative supposed to do it or he could do it? He doesn't have to do it. That's already a shaila in Kiddushin itself. It may be that no matter what, vigo'al is a mitzvah, but either way, that's a very interesting rasha that goes through over there. Ravina Bachaya says, everybody knows, what happens at Yovel? What happens at Yovel? We know the slaves go free, right? We know that. What else happens? The land goes back to its owner. So there's no question that by Yovel, this land is going back to the original owner. This guy's not selling it for good, this ancestral land, that's Sdei Achuza. He's selling it only for right now until Yovel happens. When Yovel happens, it goes to him. And if he's dead, then it goes to his kids, his Yorshim. Whoever gets it from him, that's what's going to happen. But even being taken away for a few years is so bad that we tell him, anybody can redeem it from you, for you. Anybody can go ahead and take it and grab it and do whatever it is it's supposed to be. Otherwise, just wait for Yovel. You'll get it back then, and you'll get whatever you need over here. You have to sell it for the amount that the grain is going to be, but that's what it has to be. However, you can only buy it back after 2 years. Let's say, for example, Aaron, you decide that you're going to buy the field off me. I have ancestral land, it's coming in my field. You decide you're going to buy it off me. You buy it off me, and then all of a sudden, either I become rich again, or one of my relatives comes along and says, whoa, you sold that field? I'm going to buy it back. You get it for 2 years automatically. It's not like I can go back immediately and say, I want my land back. It's too late. If you sell it, 2 years is automatic. And then afterward, whatever, however many years are afterward, that's what you're allowed to do. But 2 years are automatic. You can't do anything whatsoever. There's, yeah?
If Yovel is only 1 year away, is that also perceived that?
Yeah, it's for sure. There's no question whatsoever. If you sold your field and Yovel's the next year, the sale is only for 1 year. There's no trickery happening over here. There is a famous Orach Chaim HaKadosh in this week's Parsha that says a massive chiddush that only here, if you sell a land for 60 years, Yovel doesn't affect it. Now, that's similar to a Gemara Makos, if anybody knows, in Daf Gimel and Daf Dalet. But we don't hold that way. There's nothing like it. There's nothing that we say anything like that. But yes, normally it's up until Yovel, and no question, it just goes back automatically. There's a Rambam. Hilchos Deos Perakei Halacha Yud Beis. Here's what Rambam says. A person should not sell a field in order to buy a house. He should not sell a house in order to buy metaltalin. He shouldn't sell a house in order to buy other metaltalin. Nor should he do business with money that he made from the sale of his house. Don't use it. If you have money from a house or a field, put it toward the house, put it toward a field. But you shouldn't use the money of a house and use it for metaltalin. Don't do that, says the Rambam. Now, everybody asks, what does that mean? Where does he get that from? Where's the source for this that the Rambam's saying? Is it good business acumen? And he's telling you, this is a great idea. Don't sell a house, don't sell a field, because you're not going to get your money back. Metaltalin is just not worth it. Is that what's going to be? Everybody asks. But, and he does say something similar in Hilchos Shemitah, Perek Yud Aleph, Halacha Gimel, but there's differences between the two, and those are explained over there by those Rishonim. So the question is, where does he get from? So the Torah Tumima says, it's based on a Torah's Kohanim in our Parsha. Torah's Kohanim says in this Pasuk, how do we know that one shouldn't sell his field and leave the money in his apundaso, put it in the bank? How do you know you shouldn't sell your field for no reason and put it in the bank? How do we know that you should keep the field, use the money that you get from the pears, and use it in some other way? Nor should he buy an animal. He shouldn't buy kalim. He shouldn't buy even a house. How do we know that? When you become poor, you sell your field. Never sell a field unless you're poor. Never sell it. And the Rambam says, from this Torah's Kohanim, that you can't sell your field unless you're poor. He said, halacha lemaisa. You have to be so careful. If you own a field, don't sell it, no matter what. He said that that was an actual halacha, and it's not just business practice. This might even be a pure halacha that you're not allowed to do without. Now, why not? What's wrong with selling your ancestral field? What's the problem with it? I'm sorry? Only Eretz Yisrael. Only Eretz Yisrael. But what's wrong with it? What's the problem with doing something like that? How can we tell you don't sell your ancestral field unless you're poor? What if the guy gets an awesome deal? What if land goes up tremendously, real estate goes up tremendously, and you're looking at it and you're like, oh my gosh, if I sell right now, I can make a ton of money. Well, why in the world wouldn't you be able to sell it? Rav Wolfson says, based on the Arvi Nachal, such a beautiful pshat. You have to hear this. This is an unbelievable pshat. Asnil ben Kenaz, we all know what happened, right? Kalev ben Yefuna goes out and said, whoever captures Kiryat Sefer, whoever gets Kiryat Sefer, will get my daughter Achsa as a wife. Right? That's what he said. So, obviously, there were people that wanted to destroy it. Asnil ben Kenaz, his step or half-brother, Asnil ben Kenaz and Kalev ben Yefuna Kenizi, Kalev's mother married Kenaz after his father passed away. So Kalev and Asnil ben Kenaz were half-brothers of one another. They shared the same mother. They had different fathers. That's why Kalev ben Yefuna is known as HaKenizi. So Kalev ben Yefuna said that line. Asnil ben Kenaz went and captured the city, captured Kiryat Sefer, and then afterward married Achsa, took Achsa as a wife. The Gemara tells us an unbelievable thing. That's not what happened. Asnil ben Kenaz did not capture the city. Asnil ben Kenaz figured out the halachos that were lost in the days of Yoshua when Moshe Rabbeinu died. When Moshe Rabbeinu died, Moshe Rabbeinu said to Yoshua, if you have any questions, ask me those questions right now. And Yoshua said, come on, Moshe, I've been with you the whole time. You think I have any questions? Like, I've been with you the whole time. Lo yomush mitokol. I never moved away from the Ohel Moed. I've been with you the whole time. I have no questions. And Moshe Rabbeinu felt bad. And at that moment, 1,700 kalvachomers, gezeras shavas, all these things were lost from the world. Shilas that they could have had, 700 different kalvachomers, all these things were completely lost, completely gone. And Yoshua, the people wanted to kill him. They said, Yoshua, what happened? Where's the kalvachomers? Where's those gezeras shavas? What happened to them? And Yoshua said, I don't know. And I'm not allowed to ask Hashem because lo b'shamayim hi. I can't ask a Kadosh Baruch Hu for them. And they were lost completely. Says the Gemara, Asnil ben Kenaz brought them back. The line behind Kiryat Sefer is not just a city. Kiryat Sefer means he learned the Sefer. He was Kore the Sefer. He read the Sefer and he brought back those halachos that were completely, completely lost. Says Rav Wolfson, based on this Arvi Nachal, every step you take in Eretz Yisrael, every four amos we should call it, is another letter of the Torah. The size of Eretz Yisrael, where every four amos, leads up to 600,000 different letters in the Torah. There are 600,000 four by four amos, is what he says. There are 600,000 letters in the Torah, even though there's only 301,805. We somehow understand it to be 600,000 letters, the Gemara and Kiddushin. And he says, what that means is the following. He did capture Kiryat Sefer. And when he captured Kiryat Sefer, he was able to bring back those halachos that were lost. Because those halachos were ingrained in the ground. They were there in the ground. They were sitting in the ground of Eretz Yisrael. And when he captured that land and lived on the land, he was able to be zocheh to get the halachos of that land. Is that unbelievable? It's both. He captured the city and he learned the halachos. He got both of them. That's Arvei Nachal, which means if you have ancestral land, then you have a chelek in Torah that no one else has. Your four amos in Eretz Yisrael is a letter in the Torah that no one else can get. You own that letter. You have those Divrei Torah. You get the halachos. It's all on you. You have them. And if you sell your ancestral land, you lose your chelek in that letter. Even if you're only selling it for a few years up until Yovel, you lose your chelek for those few years. You can't learn the same way. You're missing out on everything. That's the reason why you can't sell the land unless you absolutely need to. If you absolutely need to and you're so poor, you won't have time to be able to learn anyway. So sell the land, go do something else. You'll get the land back later anyway. But if you're not poor, don't sell it. It's like literally taking your Torah, giving it over to somebody else and saying, all right, you take it instead. And you can't do that. Yeah, Dave.
I mean, is this sale? Because it's more like a rental agreement.
It is. It is a rental, but it's considered a sale that reverts back in Yovel. It is an actual mechira.
Why can't you set up a deal with somebody? Let's say you're not a farmer.
Yeah.
Like the Yisachar and Zvulun situation.
You could. Normally what they would do is they'd have a sharecropper that rents the field. That's the normal way of doing it. This is a guy who needed the money. He couldn't do sharecropping. He had to get the money right now. So the only thing he could do is he sold the field. Yeah, he was down in taxes. He needed money right then. He had this one thing, so he went for it. Right, he went ahead and did it. Maybe that's the idea behind it. But this is such an unbelievable thing. And that tells you, I don't know if anybody has the ability to do this. If you can own land in Eretz Yisrael, own actual land in Eretz Yisrael, there's a huge milah to that. A huge milah. And we don't get it. We honestly don't get it. What's going to be when Mashiach comes back? Is the land going to divide up again? It's going to be given over in a different way? It's going to spread out? I don't know. But owning land in Eretz Yisrael, aside from the fact that if you own land in Eretz Yisrael, you can keep Shemitah, you can keep Truma, Meiser Sheni, you can do all those mitzvos that you have because you own a piece of land in Eretz Yisrael. Here's another thing you get. You also have a chelik in Torah that you didn't have otherwise. Yeah. Who wrote it? It's not literal. It's as if, when you own that land, it's as if you'll get it in your head, the 1700 Kal v'chomers, etc. But it wasn't actually written down. He just figured them out. Yeah.
So what do you mean by saying that if you have land in Eretz Yisrael, do you mean like farmland or like even renting it?
It's really farmland or the land itself, as opposed to like a second floor, third floor, etc. But obviously, owning anything in Eretz Yisrael is a huge bracha. So if you can own anything in Eretz Yisrael, just go and have it. Yeah. I mean, some of you know that.
But in a city, two parshas ago, it said that in a city, if you sell a property within a walled city.
This is right in the walled city.
But then there's no Yovel.
That's another issue. There's another issue regarding a walled city because that's a different story. You need protection in that city, and just keep selling and keep reverting back is not good for the protection of the city. Right. I've had my thing in which I've wanted to do a lot of things. My wife still won't let me. I've wanted to own a donkey to be able to make sure that I get Pidyon Petra Chomor. I've wanted to do Pidyon Petra Chomor for years now. I've wanted to have my own sheep ready for me for when the Beis HaMikdash is rebuilt, so I'll have an animal that's a korban that's right there. I used to have one. I don't have one anymore. So I wouldn't want to have one. What?
It was a sheep.
Yeah, it was an actual sheep. So I had the rights to a sheep when the Beis HaMikdash comes that I have something for a korban. Because I figured it's going to go up in price at some point. So either way, regardless, so I had one. I don't have it right now, but I'm going to get it back. It's going to happen. And I've always wanted to own a tiny piece of land or 4x4. So they have it. In every Shemitah, they tell you they can buy it, whatever. But that's like for rich people. It's like for $1,600 for like 4 amos, and it really doesn't count as anything. I just want to find like a little land and like lay claim to it. And so just sort of like put my stake in there and just be, this is mine. This is absolutely mine. At some point, I'm going to do it. I'm just, again, I need to do it either without my wife's permission or without her knowing about it, or to the point where I finally convinced her about it. I know, it's fine. She's not going to watch. My daughter will watch, and everybody else will watch, and my kids will watch at some point, but she's not going to watch this one, so it'll work out well. We'll be fine. Yeah. Yeah, and then you get around, like, what is the government owned? So maybe you could do some sort of... Yeah.
You don't know what shape.
Well, we don't know what. But now it's no longer. Now it's every man for themselves. Who knows what's going to be when Mashiach comes? For now, we can go ahead and grab. Yeah.
If you're a lady, are you
from I'm not. I'm a Yisrael.
If you are.
I'm not.
No, you're not.
Yeah.
He's asking if you are a lady.
If you are.
I hate Levium. Yeah. Levi has a problem. They would have to do right by Ari Mikla. They'd have to figure something out, like by Shechem or by Chevron or something like that, and everything like that. But they'd have to figure something out. But I'm not. I'm probably, honestly, I have no idea, but I really, really like the ocean. So if I was willing, I wouldn't be surprised. But I'm not rich, so I don't know. Maybe I took like part of the Yisachar part as villain, like became the poor guy that became out there. But I have no idea. We'll find out soon. If somebody tells me, oh, wait, you're for sure from Yehuda or Binyamin because those are the only two shots. No, they're still around. The other guy still came. We just don't know who's who. It'll be good. There's a proof to that. So now, the Ayelus HaShachar points out something awesome over here, that anyone who even attempts to get the land back for his relative is called a Goel. This guy is called a Goel. He didn't do it yet, but he's called the Redeemer. He's like the Messiah. It sounds like if you do anything to bring land back to its proper owners, you are like a Mashiach. You're a goel. You're somebody who's redeeming something for somebody else. Maybe it's so because, again, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants there to be Seder in this world. Anything we do to facilitate that Seder would allow you to become a goel, somebody who's like a Mashiach behind it. But that's amazing. Do you hear this? Just by helping someone out and just by giving somebody something back that he didn't have beforehand, or even taking it so that it doesn't go into the hands of strangers, you are like Mashiach. That's a goel. You're a Goel Yisrael in such a way, which is an unbelievable thing. The Torah to me and the Malbim say, the closer the relative, the more right he has to redeem this land. It's really based on a Torah's Kohanim. The closer the relative, he has the most right. So I don't know what that would be like. If it goes like by Yerusha, it is the father of the first right, and then the father's brothers, and then the father's sons. I don't know exactly who gets first right when it comes down to it. Is it like Yerusha, or is it something else? But regardless, there are tremendous dinim over here, and the seller cannot just stam, like just say, I'm not going to do it. Pardes Yosef says, there's a men here. Me'achu zaso. Umochar me'achu zaso. And Rashi said, right, you should sell part of your land, but not everything. You shouldn't sell everything in your land itself. He then points out, no, you know what? It's going to take too much time. I'm going to ask you to look at the Pardes Yosef yourself. Okay? Good? I'll just tell you right now, Ba'al shulchan zeh shu'achalnu alav. Right? Does anybody want to explain that line to me? Ba'al shulchan zeh, on this table, she'achalnu, that we ate, alav, on it. Do we have to say the word alav?
No.
Was there any point to that whatsoever? No. And actually, isn't it may alav from on top of it? We ate what was on top of it. We didn't eat the table. We didn't. I'm sorry?
Why wouldn't that work for him?
It does. It should be may alav in some way, shape, or form. There's a shaila. Look at the parties if you want to know the answer. Okay? There is something out there. Rashi says in Pasuk Chavav, is there really such a thing as a Jew that received an inheritance in Eretz Yisrael that doesn't have any relatives? Is that possible? The Ein La'ish Goel. If he doesn't have any relatives, then Visigiyad will become rich enough and he'll be able to buy it back himself. Is there such a thing as somebody like that? If you go far back enough, we're all going to be related. So how is that possible that he doesn't have a Goel? So it must mean he doesn't have a relative who's wealthy enough to buy back the land. That's got to be it, right? We're just talking about a guy who doesn't have enough money to be able to do it himself. Meaning, he has relatives. He doesn't have wealthy relatives. He has relatives. He has relatives who aren't willing to help him. But that's what it means. Being Ein La'ish Goel does not mean he doesn't have any relatives. He has relatives that are not willing to help him when it comes down to it. That's what it sounds like. The Chassam Sofer says in Torah Moshe, the Chidush Rim as well. He says, if a person has no relatives who can help them, then automatically a Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to give you money enough to be able to redeem yourself. Look at the wording in the pasuk. It says, "Ki yomo kachi komako lo sa tzedra, v'ish ki lo yelo goel." If you don't have any redeemers, v'si gayado, you'll become wealthy. It's a promise, says the Chassam Sofer in the Chidush Rim. If you don't have enough and no one else is helping you, then a Kadosh Baruch Hu, you have no choice but to say to Hashem, Hashem, what do you want me to do? And Hashem will give you enough money to be able to redeem the land. It's a havtacha, it's a promise. It's an assurance that we're getting from a Kadosh Baruch Hu. The Chizkuni says, he'll find an Aveda, right? He'll inherit a huge sum of money. He's going to do it himself. Why? Because Hashem says, V'siga yado, you're going to be able to get it. Don't sit there and say to yourself, what am I going to do? I got nothing. You do have something. Have bitachon and say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to help me. Nitziv says, there will be ashkacha in all this. He's not going to find a ton of money or inherit a ton of money and use part of it. Hashem will make sure that somehow you get just the right amount so you can buy back the field. And you got to be very smart about this. You can't say like, oh, wow, I just got this money. I wonder what I should do with this money. You're going to find exactly the amount you need, and you're going to have to go back and say, instead of everything else, you want to build an, you know, a second floor in your house. You want to, you know, redo the basement. You're going to have to say, no. The first thing that I have to do is redeem my field. First, I'm going to redeem my field, and then I'm going to do everything else. Says in Itziv, not everyone gets this. It's only someone who is pure bitachon and a Kadosh Baruch Hu, a person who truly believes that a Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to help him. You go into it and you say, well, God, go ahead. Oh, he didn't give it to me. I guess it doesn't really happen. Then you're not going to get it. You have to go into it saying, it's going to happen. Hashem is going to give it to me. I know it's going to happen. And when that happens, everything is all good. The Tam Bidas, as Rav Sternbach says, that's the exact same thing that's what's going to get Mashiach. At the time when we're looking at ourselves and saying, I can't do anything anymore. There's no way we're going to have this happen. Well, we look at ourselves and we say, we know, if we keep two Shabbosim together, the Mashiach is supposed to come. Right? If we're supposed to keep that. I don't know if that's really the meaning of the Gemara. The Gemara is really saying if they would have kept the first two Shabbosim, Mashiach would have come right then. But let's say we keep two Shabbosim straight, Mashiach's going to come. Right? What it really means is that we're looking at it and we're saying, impossible. There's no way we're going to be able to do it. How in the world are we going to get every Jew in the world to keep two Shabbosim? And because of that, we're no longer relying on ourselves. What are we doing? We're saying, Hashem, we can't do it. It's you. We're leaving it in your hands. Can you do this? Can you take care of this? Because we can't do this anymore. We have no choice over your HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's on you instead. That's the beauty of that line, and that's the beauty of this. It has to be bitachon, where it's not, no longer us. Torah Quantum adds that although we allow him to buy back his field, if he becomes wealthy enough, he can't do it with a loan from someone else. He can't go up to somebody and say, hey, can you lend me money so that I can buy back my field? You're not allowed to sell another field in order to get money to be able to buy back this field. If the seller has enough money to buy back part of the land and not all of the land, the buyer has the right to refuse him and say, no, you buy back all of it or none of it. That he can go ahead and do. There are some laws that apply over here. It's not true by Hekdesh, but it does apply by the Stei Achuzah itself. Tamidas brings up another thing. He says this could apply for us nowadays when we see a poor person collecting and we know has wealthy relatives. Sometimes you look at this guy and you're just like, come on, dude, why don't you just go to that person who's really wealthy? You have a really wealthy uncle. You have a really wealthy grandfather. You have a really wealthy etc. And you're asking me for money? Why are you asking me for money if you have these wealthy relatives out there? To this, Rav Sternbach says, obviously, if he could go and do that easily, then he would do so. You have to look at this as if ish ki lo yelo goel. He doesn't have a redeemer. There's no one there to help him. I know there might be someone who's wealthy in the family, but it's likely that he can't get anything from whatsoever. And he says it's possible, it's even onos dvarim to do such a thing. You go up to a guy and you say, hey, why don't you just go ask your relatives instead? Your relatives are wealthy, go up to them. That's possibly onos dvarim. Onos dvarim means afflicting a person with words when you make him feel bad. When he's like, listen, you don't think I would if I could? I can't. There's nothing I can do. That's what could happen if you do such a thing. Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein actually brought up from the Alshich. Until now, the Pesukim have all been speaking Lashon Rabim. They've all been going to your Achichem, your brothers, plural. Now it's Kiyomuch Achicha, B'Lashon Yachid. Why? Oh, it's so sad. This is 100% true. When someone comes up to us and asks us for money, you have a Meshulach that comes in Shul and comes up to you and asks for money. So why don't you give him all the money in your wallet? Why don't you give him everything you have? What's the simple answer to that question? Because they're like, look, I need some money also, and if I give a dollar, and he gives a dollar, and he gives a dollar, he's going to have a lot of money, because there are other people around. He doesn't need me, right? He needs other people. There's other people that are around. So the Alshich says, such an unreal thing. Unreal thing. He says, our problem is that we think that other people are going to take care of him. It's written in singular form. Ki yamuch achicha. He's your brother. There is nobody else who can take care of him. There's no one else who can do anything. It's up to you. Now, if it's up to you, and he's coming to you and he's saying, I literally am at the end of my ropes. I can't do anything else. There's no one else I can come to. Well, that changes things, doesn't it? Because there's no one else there. If there's no one else there, then you're going to give him a lot more money than you gave beforehand. You're not going to give him the dollar. You're going to give him a little bit more because you say to yourself, look, I'm the only one who can do it, then I'm going to do everything I can. Not only that, but when people are at tzaros, when they hear horrible things that might have happened, what's the typical response? They go, Hashem Yazor. Hashem should help. Hashem should help. And that's a great thing to say. Obviously, it's trying to build up that person, trying to do things over there. But the line is, I can't do it. Hashem will do it for you. This pasuk is telling us that when it comes to other people, you're not allowed to say Hashem Yazor. For you, you say Hashem Yazor. For me, if I need something, then I have no choice, Hashem Yazor. But for someone else, no. It's Kiyomo Chachicha, you have to be the Goel. Im Ein Leish Goel. If no one's willing to do it, then the guy says, all right, Hashem Yazor. But you can't say Hashem Yazor. It's him. He has to say Hashem Yazor. It's a scary thing to think about. That's what Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein learns out from these psukim. That I can't ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu to help others. I can ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu to help out me. But when it comes to others, I have to be more involved. And that's really, really hard. There's a Moshe Zakenim and Rabbeinu Ephraim over here. There's a Mesha Chochma that I think sort of answers it. But we're going to go a little bit different. We're going to have to end this off over here. Tam Vidas, Rav Sternbach says, is another simple lesson. I'm skipping the Rav Moshe Feinstein and the Darash Moshe. Tam Vidas is another simple lesson. When a person sins very badly and wants to redeem himself, but he has no idea how to do it, he doesn't have the strength to fix up all the issues that he has. He's got a lot of issues, he's got a lot of problems, and he's no idea what he's going to do over here. How am I going to fix up the pegamim that I've made in myself, in my soul, and cleanse myself from the klipos that I've surrounded myself with? What should I do? For example, he can't get over his dependency on marijuana. He can't stop himself from drinking. He can't get the images out of his head. Those are obvious, right? Those are things that happen to normal people. There's nothing I can do. What do you want me to do, HaKadosh Baruch Hu? There are total limitations in what I can do over here, and I don't know what to do. What am I supposed to do? I can't even go to sleep at night because I'm so anxious. I'm so anxious. What do you want a person who has an anxiety problem to do? You want to just get over it? Get over it. Just do something for yourself. What do you expect this guy to do? If the guy is sitting there and he's like, I'm addicted. I have an addiction. And you say to him, well, be a man. Man up and just stop yourself completely. You think that's going to work? I mean, we've seen many, many times over that doesn't work. And the line that we're saying over here is, what should this guy do to redeem himself? What's he supposed to do? If you see, obviously, if there's a way to have a geula, if there's some way for you to do something, the line over here of, you see the guy going down because he's got a drinking problem, because he has a drug problem, because he has an issue that's there. Then, he's lost himself. He has no idea what to do. Then you, as a relative, go and help him. The goas mim karachid, do everything you can. And if this guy can't do it, and the relative has no idea what to do, and there's nothing to do there, then v'siga yado. You have no choice but to say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and this is the line that Talmid Das says over here, v'siga yado, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is there for you. When you're all the way on the ground, you have nobody else to ask, and you have nothing else to do over here, stand up and say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's on you. I've done everything I can now, and I want to get better, and I want to do something. I can't do it on my own. Hashem, it's on you. Do it for me. And that's what Rav Sternbach says. The idea is, don't give up hope no matter what, no matter how bad it seems, no matter how bad the addiction is, work on yourself and get yourself out of it. You can get yourself out of it. There's a TV show that everybody knows has become the most popular TV show over the last 6-7 years. I have absolutely no idea. And it's a completely Tomei TV show that's on HBO. I think it's on HBO. I haven't. 10 years? Yes. You didn't have to say it, right? But yes, 100%. I don't understand. Listen, obviously, I'm speaking from a different world, and I get it. I sort of get it. But there's so many people who literally have an addiction to this. Is it over yet?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is? It's completely over? And like, there were people that were going on binge watchings for 4 days straight to keep themselves up. It's like, literally, but you can't tell them not to. They're totally addicted. What are you going to tell somebody who's addicted? Somebody who just can't stop himself. What are you going to tell them? Just get over it. You can't. That's where a person can say to a Kadosh Baruch Hu, I don't need this, and I know this isn't good for me. I know it's not good for my soul. I know it's not good for my eyes. I know it's not good for any part of me. There's nothing good that's going to come from this. Nothing, except maybe I can talk to the other people at the water cooler about what happened last night and be like, oh my God, that was so awesome. I bet you didn't know. That's like the best thing that can come from it. What's the point? At the end of the day, that's what you want? That's what you want to do? This is the idea that Talmud Daf says. You're learning it from right over there. There's a Mincha B'lula. The Shach learns from this pasuk that a certain mitzvah that you have is Yerusha from your parents. Let's say, for example, your parents always donated wine for the shul. You keep that mitzvah no matter what, even if someone else buys it, unless it was sold off every year. Like some shuls sell yaknahaz every year. You know what I'm saying? Yain Kiddush Ner La'Avdala to whatever. So they go ahead and sell that every year on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. If they don't sell it every year, it was always this guy's thing. He always bought it no matter what. You can't take that away. Even if 1 year somebody gets up and says, well, I'm going to pay X amount of dollars, you have to sell it back to that original guy. It's learned out from this pasuk, says the Shach. You can't take away the right that a person has to a certain mitzvah and shul. And if a guy has that right, no way you can take it away from him. You cannot do that whatsoever. It's his mitzvah no matter what. His mitzvah to be able to take care of. There's an amazing Orach Chaim HaKadosh, and I'm going to skip it because I want to get to the Medrash Tanchuma. An amazing Orach Chaim HaKadosh. He talks about laziness and what a person can do to get himself out of laziness. Kiyama Chachicha is really the laziness of the person, how a person has to start working on himself and go through. Amazing Orach Chaim HaKadosh. But I'm going to end with this Medrash Tanchuma. Medrash Tanchuma says, Kiyama Chachicha refers to the Jews in the days of Achashverosh. Umachar me'achuzaso, sold his achuza, refers to them being sold to Haman. They were sold to Haman. Remember, Achashverosh, Haman was willing to buy them for 10,000 kikar kesef, and then in the end, Achashverosh just said, take them for free. Uba goalo, the goel is Mordechai, who helped them, as it says, v'nahafachu, and it got turned around completely. So Chaim Kanievsky turns in time of the crow and says, what's pshat? How do you understand these pasuk? Well, what does that mean? How is this pasuk referring to Mordechai and the Nahafahu? What does that mean exactly? And he says, Talmid HaKadosh says, by non-Jews, there's no such thing as a pidyon. If there's a sickness, there's no such thing as tshuva getting rid of it. There are other ways of getting rid of it, but there's no such thing as a pidyon in which they do something and all of a sudden it goes away. Could it go away? Yeah, somehow there's such a thing as tefillah. But they don't have the concept of a pidyon the way that we have it. If they're supposed to be punished, they're going to be punished. And the way it happens, it says Rav Chaim Kanievsky, there's something different. The gezeira has to happen no matter what. Bnei Yisrael, on the other hand, have the concept of geula. And even if we have a gezeira that's against us, and it's out against us and it's bad, something bad is going to have to happen, it could be taken away and given to other people. It could be taken away from us and placed on other people. What that means is, when we had the gezeira of kiyomu chachicha, and we were machon yachuzas already sold, don't worry, because Mordechai can always come along as a goel, and then Ahavah will turn it around for us. We have that ability through tshuva that no other nation in the world has, and that's the lesson behind the parsha. We're able to redeem ourselves and make ourselves better, and that's what the Medrash means over here. The idea behind the entire pasuk. So again, going through the little things, how does this happen? Through Shemitah itself. We went through the seven different names that a poor person has. We went through Rashi, when a person can sell his ancestral land, and it's not very often. We went through the Rambam and his advice, so to speak, the advice that he said, and we went through Rav Wolfson, the great idea of why it's going to be so bad to do it. We went through the Ayelos HaShachar, getting land back for a relative. We skipped the part as Yosef. We went through what happens if a person wants to get a certain inheritance, the Rashi, the Netziv, the Tam Bidas, etc. Went through Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberstein with that amazing shot from the Alshech itself. And then we skipped down to some of the Ramazan, the Rav Sternbach's Remez, the Shas Remez, the Midrash Tanchuma's Remez, that's explained by Rav Chaim Kanievsky. Shkoyach, everybody. Have a great Shabbos.